In the Jewish tradition, the rabbis, in the Jewish faith, they love to tell parables, as did Jesus. They also love to tell riddles. I love riddles. Do you like riddles? Here's a riddle. See if you can figure this one out. So there's two chimney sweeps, and they're sweeping a chimney, and they both fall down the chimney. And they climb out of the chimney, and one of them has soot all over his face, and the other's face is completely clean. For whatever reason, one soot all over his face, the other didn't get a speck on him. Which one of them went and washed his face? Well, the students would say, of course, the one that had the dirty face went and washed it. No, no, say the rabbis. The one with the clean face looks at the dirty face, and he assumes that his face must be dirty as well. But the one with the dirty face looks at the one with the clean face and thinks his face is clean. So it's the one with the clean face that goes and washes his face. Huh? There's wisdom in that riddle. Oh, how we assume that other people are like us, don't we? How we assume that the way others see things is the same way we see them. That's not really surprising. I mean, the only set of eyes we have to look through are our own. The only life we have to measure experience by is our own. It's no doubt that we just assume that other people's experience and the way they look at life and the way they see things and the way they understand things is like us. We just make that assumption. And sometimes we nurture that assumption. I remember speaking to the treasurer at a United Church one time, and I said, why do you come to church? He says, I come to church because I want to be with like-minded people. Fair enough. He said, I want to come to church, and I want to be among those who think the way I do, who see the world the way I do, who have a similar faith to my own, who have similar goals to my own. I just want to be among people that are like me. You know, a lot of people are involved in social media now. Most of the people that are using Facebook these days are our generation. The kids don't use it anymore. But, you know, on Facebook, you can like things. You know, oh, like. Click on the likes, and people measure their self-worth by how many likes they get on the things they post on Facebook and Twitter and social media. I don't know if this makes any sense to you or not, but you know what? These social media platforms do is they see what you like, they see the things you read, they measure how much time you're spending reading certain things, and then they send you more of the same stuff. So eventually, on social media, all you're seeing is the stuff that reinforces what you already like to read and what you already believe and the way you already see things. Social media does the same thing. It just reinforces what the views that you already hold. That wasn't the original intention. The idea with social media, and I was involved in creating a social media platform back in the early 90s, and the idea was to bring diversity to the table, to allow people to have conversation with each other and to see things that other people are important to other people from all over the world and from every different diverse walk of life. But that's not what's happened. No, we just keep reinforcing what we already believe and think and know and understand and experience. So our gospel reading today is a bit counterculture, isn't it? Jesus says to the religious leader, don't invite the people that are like you to engage with. Invite the people that are different from yourself. You're all well-to-do and you have a meal to serve, but invite in the crippled, the lame, the blind, the poor. Invite these people who are different than yourselves. See what you might learn. And not only what you might learn, but blessed will you be because you have reached out. And I mean, on the surface, the parable is really saying, you know, it's about kindness and generosity, but it's more than that. I have a friend, a colleague in Peterborough, who runs a program in Peterborough called Bridges Out of Poverty. And what they do is they bring together people who are fairly affluent, middle class, you know, getting along okay folks, with people who are just scraping by from day to day. And they bring these folks together, and they put them in the same room and in the same conversation over a period of months. They learn. It's not that the people that are getting by day to day learn how to create a budget or something. They learn from each other. And the people that are getting along just fine learn a lot from those who are somehow able to eke out an existence against all odds. There's a lot to learn. And so in this story, it's not just about being kind and generous. It's about engaging with people who are not like you, because you will be blessed and you will learn something. But not only that, the other thing about gathering with people who are different than you is that those people too are children of God. Like, God is in all people. And if you're only engaging with the people who are of one little segment of humanity, you'll only get a little glimpse of God. But if you engage with a wide variety and a diverse group of people and views and ideas and thoughts, and you'll see much more of God. There's another parable, not a riddle this time, but a rabbinic parable. God is, it's the story of the Exodus. Remember the story of the Exodus when God brings the Israeli slaves out of Egypt, and they cross the Red Sea, and Moses leads them out of slavery and so on. So there's this parable that's told, or story, that God's got a couple of junior angels, and thinks, well, it's time for them to step up and take on an important assignment. So God goes to these two angels and says, I've got a little job for you. It's bigger than anything you've taken on before, but my people are in Egypt, the Israelites, and they're being held captive in slavery, and I don't really like that. So I want you to, I'll give you some authority, I'll give you a little bit of power, and I want you to get those Israelites out of Egypt into freedom. So the angels go, yeah, we can do that, sure, work for it. So the angels go off. A little while later, God comes along, and here's the angels, and they're leaning over the balcony of heaven, and they're looking down, and God comes along and says, how's it going? They say, good, look, we've got the Egyptians, and they're all in the Red Sea there, and we're bringing the sea back down on top, and we're drowning all of them. Look at the chariots, they're floating on the water. Look at them. We've got them, but the Israelites, they're safe on the other side, but boy, we're getting rid of those Egyptians. And God says, what? You are dismissed. You will never have an important responsibility for me again. And they're saying, what? Why? We did what you wanted. We got the Israelites out of Egypt, and we're punishing those slave masters. And he says, don't you get it? The Egyptians are also my children. And you're drowning them. No. The Bible is full of stories of the encounter with those who are beyond our clan, that are outside of our experience of life, and that have different eyes to share with us, different experiences, different views. It's full of examples of that. You know, you remember the disciples, when they met Jesus on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him. He was, what does the Bible say? The gospel says they met a stranger on the road to Emmaus. And it was only later that it was revealed that when their eyes were opened, that it was the Lord. The Lord was a stranger. Jacob, when he's wrestling with the angel, you remember that story? The angel comes down and Jacob wrestles with this angel, this stranger in the night. The stranger turns out to be God. Turns out that he leaves a mark on Jacob, a limp that he has for the rest of his life. He was marked by God in that struggle with the stranger. You remember Abraham? Abraham comes out of the tent, and there's these two strangers there. And he says to them, what are you and who do you want? And they go on to talk about the task that God has for him, and how Sarah's going to have a baby, and how her name will be changed from Sarai to Sarah, and Abram's name will be changed from Abram to Abraham, and so on. That whole story, who reveals the voice of God to Abraham? A couple of strangers. You remember the Samaritan, this Jewish person is walking along the road and gets mugged, and all of his friends walk by, the Pharisee, the Levites, and all the people of his clan walk by and ignore. Who's the one that helps them? It's the foreigner, it's the stranger, it's the Samaritan that takes them to a hotel and puts them up and says, here's some money and I'll pay you whatever's left when I come back. It's full of stories of the need that we have if we want to really see all of God there is to experience and to see. We need to look beyond our own little clan, our own little group of people who are, well, as the treasurer said in that one church, like-minded. I know that diversity and welcoming strangers isn't getting a great rap these days. I think we need to be different. We need to be counterculture. We need to be a community of faith that stands up against some of those ways that we see being very popular but not very well represented in the Bible. A few weeks ago, I shared a story from a theologian and homiletics professor named Fred Craddock. And I have another story of his. When he was just a young student at theological college, he, in his tradition, in his church, they did this something similar to what we do in ours, which was students are sent out on internships. In fact, we have Elizabeth Amaro is going to be joining us this fall. And she has been a theological student, but she's not yet ordained, and she is continuing to do her what's called supervised ministry education. And that means that she has to fulfill that experiential education before she is ordained. This preacher was doing the same thing. He was sent out, and now when I did it, I had two four-month summers, and his was similar. And he was sent to this little church in Tennessee that was for 4 months. His job to be the pastor for 4 months of his internship. And it was a beautiful little church, he says. It was all white sideboard, beautiful white frame wood chapel. Not very big, but had a bell tower in the steeple. And all the pews inside, this is quite amazing, but all the pews inside this little chapel were cut from this same one single great poplar tree. This massive tree was cut down and all the pews were made from this tree that were in there. So there weren't that many pews, but still, all from the same poplar tree. And over in the corner, there was the little, you know, those pump organs, you know, those kind of the pedals on them that's what they had. The kids always got on them and made a lot of noise with them, but sometimes music came out of them. And one of those pump organs. And it was this beautiful little chapel. And so Fred is serving in this chapel with these folks. Now, at the same time, the interstate was being built just a few miles down the road. So just a few miles from this beautiful little white chapel nestled in pine trees, there was just a massive construction project going on. And it was mud everywhere. And there were a lot of temporary people who had moved in to do the construction work. You know, and they were different than the people that went to church in this little chapel. These were people like hard hat types and people that were, you know, construction workers. Some of them had come from some distance, so they spoke with a different accent and they looked different, and so all these mix of people on this construction site. And there were a few hundred of them. And it was a mess. Equipment everywhere. And they were just staying in temporary shelters. It was in the summertime, so some of them had just had trailers and lean-tos and tents, and they were very temporary. But Fred went to the board and he said, you know, he says, we got all these construction workers down the road, and they're all there, and they don't have to work over the weekends. They're just kind of hanging out on the construction site. And, you know, they're not that much different than us. They need faith. They need to worship. They need a place to they need friends. Why don't we go over and invite them to come and be part of the congregation while they're here? So they said, well, we'll have to take that up at the next board meeting. And so at the next board meeting, they said, you know, we're not sure. You know, they're only here temporarily, and they're not really much like us. I don't think they'd fit in. That was the phrase they used. I don't really think they'd fit in, you know? And Fred said, yeah, but they'll fit in. I mean, whether they don't fit in or not, they could be brothers and sisters in Christ, and we could worship with them, and we could help them out. We could, you know, support them while they're here, they're away from their family. No, I don't think they'd fit in. So they talked about it for about an hour, and then they had to go home, so they postponed for another week, had another meeting a week later. And the following meeting, they came prepared, and the one person member spoke up, and he happened to be the brother-in-law of the chair of the board, and he said, I'm going to make a motion that you can't be a member of this church unless you own property in this county. That was the motion. You can't belong to this church unless you own property in the county. And it was passed unanimously, except for Fred's vote, but he couldn't vote anyway. Well, about 20 years later, after he'd been ordained and he was now teaching in a theological college, he took his wife Nettie down to see the site, because this had happened before he'd met her, and so he wanted to show her. And it took them forever to find this little church, because this place was now just massively grown up. It had the interstate was now through there, and little communities had sprung up, and there were hundreds of thousands of people in the area now, and there were shopping malls, and it was just like it had just expanded like crazy. And it took them a little while, but eventually down some side road they found this little white chapel church, and it looked exactly the same as it had 20 years earlier. Beautiful little white church nestled in the pines, except the difference was that the parking lot was just full of vehicles, and it had expanded. It had a huge parking lot. Trucks, semi-trailers, cars of all sorts, and a big sign above the church entrance that said, chicken and ribs all you can eat. He says to his wife, well, it's not a church anymore, but it looks like a pretty good little place to eat. We might as well go in and get something to eat. So they went in, and that little pump organ was still over there in the corner. The pews had been reconfigured so that they were now sitting around the edge of the little chapel where people could sit and wait for a table. And there were tables in there, and they were all full, and they were busy. And Fred looked around, and he said, you know, sure is a good thing this isn't a church anymore. Look at all these types here, hard hat types, people of all different strokes and walks of life. They would not be welcome. It's a good thing this isn't a church anymore. These folks wouldn't be welcome here. Anyway, as we look forward as a congregation to the challenges and the celebrating the wonderful things that already happen in this congregation, but some of the new challenges that we face, I don't think we'll need any votes like that. I think we'll just take it by acclamation. We're going to be a church that lives out of our sense of justice, generosity, open-mindedness, listening for the voice of God, seeking the presence of God in anyone who walks through the door, anyone who comes into our circle, won't we? Yes, indeed. Amen.